The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. And now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening. Today, we're tackling abnormal pap smears with guest expert Dr. Judy Barrero of the Women's Group, a group of women OBGYNs here in Tampa. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with 1,800 women, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families through health education. And as mentioned, today it's abnormal pap smears, and it is my pleasure to introduce Dr. Judy Barrero.
Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Judy Barrero completed her undergraduate studies at Lemoyne College in Syracuse, New York, where she graduated magna cum laude with a Bachelor of Science degree in biology. She then earned her medical degree at the State University of New York Upstate Medical University College of Medicine, also in Syracuse. Dr. Barrero then completed her four-year obstetric and gynecology residency training at Upstate, where she was chief resident in her final year. She was awarded the J.P. Ryan Medal for Outstanding Academic Achievement while at Lemoyne College and was winner of the Humanism and Excellence in Teaching Award while at Upstate. Dr. Barrero is board-certified OBGYN and joined the Women's Group in Tampa in 2005. She's a member of the Hillsborough County Medical Association, the Florida Medical Association, and is a fellow of the American Congress of Obstetrician Gynecologists. She moved to Florida 5 years ago and currently lives in Lutz with husband and two daughters. And it's great having you in the Tampa area.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Although you had some experience way up north where it's going to be quite cold.
Absolutely. One of the reasons we moved here was better weather.
I imagine there's snow on the ground up in Syracuse now.
Mm-hmm. We just visited just a couple of weeks ago for Christmas, and yes, it was covered.
Okay. All right. So today's topic is abnormal pap smears. And of course, for the guys listening out there, this involves the cervix of the uterus. Why don't we start with the very basics, the anatomy. What is the cervix? Is it part of the uterus? Is it considered an independent structure?
It's actually contiguous with the uterus. So when we do a pap smear, we insert a speculum and we can see the cervix. It's a donut-shaped structure at the end of the vagina. And when we do a pap smear, what we're doing is simply taking a brush and brushing both the surface of the cervix as well as the canal. That's the canal that then leads into the uterus proper, where a baby forms and where, you know, when we talk about dilation at the time of delivery, we're talking about the cervix opening.
So one can think of the cervix as the opening of the uterus?
Correct.
Is that fair? Is it so it's from a tissue standpoint, is it similar tissue as or different?
It is unique. Mm-hmm. So the cells that make up the cervix are different from those that make up the uterus.
And it's different than the cells that make up the vagina's, the lining of the vagina.
Correct.
Okay. And why is it so important to, why are we even talking about pap smears? Why is it important to understand the health of the cervix?
That's a very important question. Usually when men or women think about gynecologists, that's the one thing that's associated with gynecology is pap smears. Not everyone understands why we do them or why it's so important, but a pap smear is a way that we have to screen for cervical cancer. Okay. So that's the only thing we're looking for when we do a pap smear is cervical cancer. And the idea is to detect it before it ever becomes cancer. It's a screening test.
Now, is this, there are many different types of cancers. Some cancers are local, and if you have it, you can just excise it, and you don't have to be concerned about anything further developing. How would you, and we're going to have a separate show on cervical cancer, but I think it's important to just touch on this so our listeners understand the importance. What about cervical cancer? What's the natural course of untreated cervical cancer?
Right. So the beauty of the pap smear is that we can catch cells before they ever turn into cancer. So the idea is to catch them when they're just starting to turn abnormal, because at that point it's very simple. The treatment can be as simple as more frequent pap smears to actually taking that abnormal piece of the cervix off, and that's it. That could be as far as it ever needs to go before it ever turns into cancer.
And what if it does turn into cancer? I mean, again, let's say someone lives in some remote corner of the world mm-hmm. and doesn't have access to screening techniques and so forth, and develops cervical cancer. Is this something that that could kill her? Is this a potential lethal disease?
Absolutely, right. Absolutely. There mm-hmm. are deaths in the United States from cervical cancer. You don't even have to talk about remote areas of the world. The interesting thing about women who are diagnosed with cervical cancer is that half of them have never had a pap smear, and another up to 10% haven't had one in the past 5 years.
All right, so this is very important. What you're saying here is that cervical cancer is a killer. It can kill a person. Does it kill because it can metastasize throughout the body?
Correct.
Okay, so it can kill you, and a significant number of people that develop cervical cancer have done so quite likely because they've never received a screening pap smear.
That is correct, and more than half.
All right, so the pap smear basically detects early changes in the cells of the cervix, which if untreated, will go on to develop cervical cancer.
That is correct. The natural history of the disease is that to go from just slightly abnormal cells to cervical cancer typically can take anywhere from 10 to 20 years to develop. However, we certainly are seeing aggressive and more progressive cervical cancers.
Yeah. Why would you want to take a chance? If some cells, abnormal cells are seen, why let it go?
Absolutely.
And so it's important to identify those cells. Now, I want to share with our audience again that this is, of course, a live show. Those of you that are just tuning in now, it's a live show. It's here December 27th. And for those that have questions or comments or would like to just call in and to our show today, the number to reach us is 289-1860. That's in Hillsborough County, 289-1860. Outside of Hillsborough County, it's 877-969-8600, 877-969-8600. And again, we are streaming live on the internet. And so coming back to the cervical or the pap smear issue, so we talked about how cervical pap smears basically identify cells of the cervix which are undergoing transformation or changing. And it's an important screening tool to identify early changes so that patients with these changes can be treated to avoid developing cervical cancer. Now, is the other issue I'd like to introduce at this time is human papillomavirus. Is all cervical cancer due to human papillomavirus or a large majority?
So what we know about the human papillomavirus is that it's seen in all cervical cancer cases. Okay. So it is a necessary factor in the development of cervical cancer. However, not all women infected with the HPV virus will go on to develop cervical cancer.
So what you're saying is every woman that develops cervical cancer will test positive for human papillomavirus.
Correct.
Okay. And so cervical cancer is felt to be a sexually transmitted cancer? I mean, that's a little leap, but
it's a bit of a leap, but yes, what we know is that the human papillomavirus is sexually transmitted. It's very easy to acquire with vaginal intercourse.
In fact, I think it's the most common sexually transmitted disease, right?
That's correct at this point. So it is very common. It's widespread. It's easily transmissible. And it's necessary in the development. Now, the only possible exception to that is women who have been exposed to diethyl sibestrol in utero. Now, that's a very specific, very tiny population. But those women are at increased risk for a different kind of cervical cancer.
Now, diethyl sibestrol, is that still being used?
No.
Okay, so that was used how many years ago?
That was about 50, 60 years ago.
And what was it used for at the time?
At the time, it was used for prevention of preterm labor.
Okay, was
one of its uses, and it was given to women in pregnancy. Since then, what we then found is that these female fetuses that were exposed because their mother was were given this medication are at increased risk for a certain type of cancers, vaginal and cervical cancers. There's abnormalities also associated with the cervix.
Okay. All right, but again, we're talking about decades ago, so it's unlikely to see any cases going forward. Although, let's leave that aside, and so we can focus on the HPV role in development of abnormal Pap smears and cervical cancer. Okay, so let's ask the question: at what age should screening begin for cervical cancer?
So that's an interesting thing. The recommendations were just changed. Just this month, ACOG came out with new guidelines.
ACOG is?
The American Congress of OBGYN. This is a governing body that basically puts forth recommendations and guidelines for OBGYNs to follow.
But I want to make a distinction here. These are obstetrician gynecologists making the suggestions, not the government.
That is correct. Yes, these are
physicians.
Correct. These are physicians who review all of the available literature on a particular topic as it develops and then make recommendations to OBGYNs. So they just changed their guidelines. They just came out December of this year. And the new recommendation is that we start screening at age 21.
21. Okay.
21. Now, in the past, just before this, it used to be either age 21 or within 3 years of becoming sexually active, whichever came first. The one distinction that I want to make that I might say more than once during the program here, because it's so very important, is that as we talk about screening intervals, remember that we're only talking about pap smear. This is completely separate from the well woman annual exam.
Right.
That needs to happen every single year.
Starting at what age?
Starting at when they become sexually active.
Okay. What happened? Now, of course, these days, things start a lot earlier than in years before. So
Correct. What
if a young lady is sexually active at 13?
So she needs to come in. Her mom needs to bring her in.
And she gets a pap smear by 16?
No. Because of the new guidelines, she would not get a pap smear until age 21.
No matter how early she begins sexually activity.
That's what the new guidelines recommend. Now, having said that, she still needs to be counseled regarding sexually transmitted diseases and their prevention. Mm-hmm. She still needs to, you know, we need to talk about the HPV vaccine. We need to talk about safe sex. We need to talk about a lot of things, even though she may not need a pap smear or a speculum exam at that time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting. The guidelines came out with 21 because that was 3 years after the assumption what the average age of the initiating sexual activity was assumed to begin. I mean, I'm just wondering where the 21 came from.
Well, the 21. So here's what happens. What they did is they did cost-benefit analyses of women and doing pap smears, what we know is that adolescents, although they have a very high rate of acquisition of the HPV virus, they also have a very high rate of clearance. So their immune system can clear the virus. Okay. In fact, in one of the studies, one of the large studies that were done, 91% of adolescents cleared the virus completely within 3 years. So one of the things they looked at was, are we doing more harm than good by testing these young women? Because if you just let it be, the vast majority of them are going to clear the infection on their own, as opposed to doing much more invasive procedures that were triggered by these abnormal pap smears and the findings that they do have the HPV infection. Many of these very young girls were having excision procedures done to their cervix, where they actually take off a piece of the cervix as part of the treatment. Right. And that has very dire, potentially dire consequences down the road when it comes time for childbearing. They have all of their childbearing years ahead of them.
So that could, so I understand. So the desire was to be judicious in setting the right age to begin the pap smears. They didn't want to be too aggressive, which could alter the, which could lead to biopsies, excisional procedures, which could change the anatomy of the cervix, which could further impact the ability to have kids down the road, potentially.
That's correct. We've seen a large increase in preterm labor and preterm deliveries as a result of excisional procedures.
Got it. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and come right back with more. Call in with your questions now. 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. Elsewhere, 877-969-8600. Be back in a flash.
Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
America's digital goddess, Kim Komando here. Cameras, camcorders, home electronics, HDTVs, computers, online security, privacy, Facebook, MySpace, Blu-ray, and MP3s. Phew, it's a good thing I'm so very gentle on your ears. If it's in your digital life, it's right here on your radio. After all, they don't call me America's digital goddess for nothing.
Kim Komando, Sunday afternoon at 2 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Foreclosure, divorce, business conflicts, you need to know your options, and we're here to help. I'm attorney Hunter Chamberlain of the Tampa law firm Chamberlain Patrick. Whether it's your home or business, your marriage, or you or a family member has been accused of a crime, having an experienced attorney on the case early can maximize your chances for a good outcome. Call Chamberlain Patrick today at 813-374-2216. That's 813-374-2216. Chamberlain Patrick, your business, your family, your home.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore. Just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems, go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Today we're learning about pap smears and the indication for pap smears, why we use pap smears for screening and cervical cancer, and the ability of the pap smear to detect early changes in the cells of the cervix, which untreated can go on to develop malignant cervical cancer, which can metastasize and kill somebody. So we talked about the age at which cervical cancer screening should begin with pap smears, and that was 21. And we also discussed the relationship or the association of human papillomavirus with the development of these changes in the cervix, which can go on to mean cancer. And so so the question I'll pose to you, Dr. Barrero, and again, we're very pleased and happy to have Dr. Judy Barrero of the Women's Group here with us today as our guest expert. Let's ask the question about the role of HPV in the abnormal pap smear. How would you respond to that?
So, you know, as we mentioned, the human papillomavirus is, for the most part, a necessary factor in the development of cervical cancer. So one of the things that we need to talk about is who needs then to be tested for the HPV virus. And we said that in the adolescent population, it is not useful to test specifically for the HPV virus simply because, one, it is so very prevalent, so you're going to pick it up very frequently. But also, we know that the adolescents are able to clear this virus. The vast majority are able to clear it on their own. So their immune system is strong enough that it can overcome and clear the virus all by itself without intervention from us.
So a healthy adolescent, we don't consider evaluating the existence of HPV.
Correct.
But if, let's say you had an immune deficient patient, does that things change there?
Absolutely. There are obviously exceptions to this. HIV positive patients who are immunocompromised certainly need more frequent screening. Also, women who have a history of abnormal pap smears that have required treatment in the past, these women also certainly need to be checked much more frequently. They need annual pap smears for sure.
But let's get back to the HPV virus. What do you, so you do evaluate HPV specifically?
Yes, in women over the age of 30, there's something called co-testing,
okay,
where you do a pap smear and check for the HPV virus at the same time.
Is that done, is that a serologic blood test, or is that done with the cells acquired with the pap smear?
They're able to do it right from the same specimen.
Okay.
So you don't need an additional test. There's no blood test. Right with the same brush that we acquire the pap smear cervical cells, they're able to run HPV on that.
Okay, good. So that's interesting. So then the ability of to use essentially the brush technique, the brush cytology technique, to evaluate existence of the HPV, is so. I guess one would say that the HPV tends to be distributed. Let me go back. I guess you'd want to get a wide specimen then when you do your brush to increase your sensitivity of the test.
That's right. And the pap smear is not, it's not a perfect test. So, you know, we talked about who are the women who get cervical cancer. We said, you know, certainly the highest risk group is the one who've never had a pap smear. Then it's, you know, the next highest risk is the ones who haven't had one in the past 5 years. And then the other, there's a whole 30% of women diagnosed with cervical cancer, which is due to false negative results on the pap smear. So it's not perfect. 30% of pap smears that come back normal could be of cervical cancer
30%.
Cases. 30% of cervical cancer cases had a normal pap smear.
Is that because of the way these are processed, computer diagnosed? Is that correct, first of all? Basically, computers diagnose the...
It's twofold. Okay. One is sampling error. So, you know, remember we're using a brush, and we're using this brush to just sort of randomly sweep over the surface of the cervix, as well as a brush that we use in the endocervix, meaning in the canal where we can't see. But there are certainly the possibility of, you know, missing cells. It's not possible to sample every single surface cell of the cervix. So that's one thing. If the abnormal cells never get transferred to the slide or to the liquid-based cytology that we're using, then obviously it's not going to be detected. And then the other part of it is, okay, once you send that specimen off, it's the cytopathologist reading the slide.
Does a pathologist actually look at every slide?
They do a lot of computer-generated sort of readings now, which are more accurate. But many of those, there's quality control. So even on the reports, a lot of times we get a report that says this was also manually screened.
So of course, if a woman has the testing every year, then there's less likelihood that a false negative would crop up over and over again. But nevertheless, that's another reason why it's important to see your gynecologist routinely. So when you visually inspect, you can also look for changes whereby if you have a false, you know, if you have a false negative test, there's things you can see which would suggest that you need to maybe take a biopsy or look deeper into a possible cell change type.
That's correct.
Okay. Yes. And I guess it also goes to the issue of whether or not, since HPV is such a major player in this, maybe the new HPV virus is a good thing for moms to consider.
For the vaccine?
For the vaccine.
Yes, absolutely. So the vaccine, the HPV vaccine, has the potential to really make a huge impact in primary prevention of cervical cancer. Because up to, you know, before this vaccine was available, all we can do is just screen, which means we're looking for a disease process that has already begun. Whereas with the vaccine, it's primary prevention. So before the cells ever turn abnormal for us to find on the pap smear, we're preventing it at that level. The thing with the vaccine is that because of the natural history of the disease, which can take, as I said, anywhere from 10 to 20 years to develop, we're not going to see the full impact of the vaccine on primary prevention for another 15 to 20 years.
Right. And I understand that the vaccine, well, there are many different types of HPV, but there are, I guess, two primary types of HPV which account for the majority of cervical cancer. Is that correct?
That's right. So 70% of cervical cancer is caused by HPV type 16 and 18.
Okay.
And those are the two that are currently covered by the vaccine that's available right now. It's in the works to do a quadrivalent, meaning covering four different types of the high-risk HPV types in the future. But right now what we have available is covering 16 and 18. So that's going to – so there's still, you know, then by default 30% of, you know, the HPV types that cause cervical cancer we don't have a vaccine for.
Yep.
The other interesting thing is that many women ask, well, you know, if you've already been exposed to the HPV virus, so you've had an abnormal pap smear, we know that you've been exposed to the HPV virus, is it still worthwhile to get the vaccine? Well, the idea is that, yes, it may still be worthwhile because chances are you haven't been exposed to both. So you may still be protected against one of them.
Or the other two.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, you may have been. That's correct. Since we can't at this point test for which subtype specifically.
Cannot
test right now for which subtype specifically you've been exposed to.
I see.
All we know is that whether it's a high risk or a low risk. The low risk, just to clarify, are not associated with abnormal pap smears. Those are only associated with genital warts.
Okay. So if a woman has genital warts, it doesn't increase her risk of developing cervical cancer?
If we know for sure that, you know, if the high-risk HPV types are negative, then we're not as concerned. That's correct.
I guess they're equally at risk to develop cervical cancer.
Well, once you have a sexually transmitted disease, so if you acquire genital warts, which is also sexually transmitted HPV virus, then you are at risk for having also acquired the high-risk HPV types.
Yeah, so a person could have both a low-risk and a high-risk HPV type.
Correct.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I tell you what, let's take another quick break, and we have Hilda on the line. I think we lost Hilda, but we'll try to get her back. And in the meantime, this is Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic with Dr. Judy Barrero, tackling abnormal pap smears. Call us at 289-1860. out of Hillsborough County, 877-969-8600. And we'll see if we can get Hilda back on the line. Bye-bye.
The head of the Fed says the recession is over.
Recession is very likely over.
That's easy for him to say. He has a job. And if the recession is over, why is Congress passing more stimulus money?
Every day we wait, more Americans will lose their jobs.
And what does all this spending do to America's future?
It's denying the wealth of future generations for the way this bill's going to work.
Now, more than ever, we're adding stimulus to the conversation. Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
America's digital goddess, Kim Komando here. Cameras, camcorders, home electronics, HDTVs, computers, online security, privacy, Facebook, MySpace, Blu-ray, and MP3s. Phew, it's a good thing I'm so very gentle on your ears. If it's in your digital life, it's right here on your radio. After all, they don't call me America's digital goddess for nothing.
Kim Komando, Sunday afternoon at 2 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon, Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2009 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please, visit drmaskin.com, and if you have not found relief for your painful red dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, this is Dr. Steve Maskin. You're listening to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Today's show is on the abnormal pap smears with guest expert Dr. Judy Barrero of the Women's Group here in Tampa. And we have on the line Janice. Janice, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Thank you.
And I understand you are a patient of Dr. Barrero's.
I am.
And you've had normal pap smears in the past, correct?
Yes.
First of all, let me ask you, I'd like to thank you for joining us today on a Sunday, soon after thank Christmas you. And during the holiday season. It's very nice and generous of you with your time. Tell us, if you would, how old you are.
I am 28.
Okay. Do you have a question for Dr. Barrera? Let's start there.
I didn't really have them, one in general, not yet.
Okay. Well, so let me pose this question, just throw it out there for us to consider. Judy's had normal pap smears, I would imagine, for several years. At what point, Dr. Barrera, could she start reducing the frequency of future pap smears when every pap smear she's had has been normal? And let's say at 30, she's 28 now, let's say at 30 she has she's tested for HPV, and let's say that's normal as well or negative as well. What then?
Okay, so as we mentioned earlier, we don't start screening until age 21. Then the recommendation is from 21 to 29 years of age, assuming that you have had three consecutive normal pap smears, that can be then spaced out to every 2 years. So then from 21 to 29, every 2 years, assuming they've been normal. Then once you get to 30, then the idea, and especially if you combine it with the HPV test, so now you do co-testing. You start doing your pap smears. You do your pap smear at age 30. It comes back normal, and you're negative for the high-risk HPV types. There's good data to show that you could space it out to every 3 years at that point. Because the HPV test adds so much more negative predictive value to the pap smear itself. So now, again, I just want to reemphasize, and especially, to Janice, who's on the line, that does not mean that you don't need to see your gynecologist, but every 2 or every 3 years, depending on where you fall, simply because you're in a low-risk population. You still need to come in every single year for your annual well woman exam, where we screen for other things, where we talk about other things. But you just realize that if your doctor tells you that you fall into that low risk category and can space out your pap smears, you just may not get a pap smear every time you come in to your well woman exam every year.
And if there's something else going on in your life, say you were recently diagnosed with diabetes, for example, then would that also suggest that one may have to drop back into the every year evaluation?
Right. So if you fall out of the low-risk category group, so if some of these things would be multiple sexual partners, for example, if you're diagnosed with, where now you're immunocompromised, you're considered immunocompromised, an abnormal history of, pap smears in the past.
Bleeding.
You have abnormal bleeding. You have anything else that's going to trigger further evaluation, then you fall out of the low-risk group.
And again, that is a reason why you need to continue with these periodic well women evaluations yearly?
Yearly, absolutely. So you must come in every year for us to examine you and to determine, do you still belong in the low risk category group or not?
Good. Does that make sense, Janice?
It does.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you have a go ahead.
I did have a question. Is there any change in that if you were to receive the Gardasil vaccine?
Okay,
does that help to further your low-risk category?
Excellent question. Now, again, the Gardasil vaccine is the HPV vaccine that was released, a few years ago?
Yes? It's been a couple of years.
Couple of years, okay. And that, again, is vaccine against the two major types of HPV, which causes or is in heavy association with cervical cancer development.
Correct. So that's an excellent question, Janice. Many women are under the misconception that because they've received the vaccine, they're covered. They're good. They don't need to be having pap smears so frequently and maybe not at all. That is absolutely false. Women who have received the HPV vaccine need to be followed exactly the same as women who have not been vaccinated. So there's no change in the recommendations for screening if you've been vaccinated.
So then what does the vaccine do for you?
So what the vaccine does is we know that it in the studies that were done to get it FDA approved, there was nearly 100% protection against cervical cancer by HPV type 16 and 18 that it covers.
So it gives your immune system. You talked before about how during adolescence you can clear the virus from your system. Your immune system is strong enough. Does this vaccine then assist or help you ramp up your immune response to enable you to clear the two viruses for which it it delivers, or I should say, it helps
designed.
You designed to protect against.
Yes, so it makes it. It's like any other vaccine, mm-hmm. You know, that you build antibodies against. Your body is able to then fight off the virus when you're exposed to it. So you never develop an infection. An HPV infection. But again, we talked about, there's a whole 30% of other cervical cancers that can be caused by some of the other subtypes, high-risk subtypes of HPV. So that's why, you know, we have no way of knowing which type you're going to be exposed to, so we still need to screen you exactly the same as someone who hasn't been immunized.
Okay. And, of course, the other thing is that with future generations of the vaccine, you'll encompass more HPV subtypes to get an even larger coverage and protection of the multiple different subtypes that can cause cancer.
Absolutely. That's already in the works, as I understand it.
Cool. That's all I had, unless you guys had anything for me.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very
You're
much,
welcome.
Janice, and have a great
no problem.
Day. Thanks for sharing some
you
of your
too.
Sunday with us.
No
all
problem.
Right. Bye-bye. Bye. And on the line is Paul. Paul from Tampa. And Paul's wife had an abnormal pap smear. And has a question about that. Paul, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Hi. My question is, you had mentioned earlier that she was diagnosed with HPV, and you had said that for younger teens, they were able to actually develop an immunity or fight off the disease. Is that possible? Because my wife is 32. Is she also able to do that, or is that something that it's only when you're younger?
Good question.
Excellent question, Paul. So what we know is that for adolescents, we want to be very conservative. We don't want to do any sort of, you know, taking off a piece of the cervix or anything that might, you know, in any way alter their ability to carry a full-term pregnancy in the future. Now, that's only typically up to age 21 when we talk about adolescents. What we know is that when you have persistent HPV infection, which is most likely what your wife has, because if she had acquired it younger, she would have probably cleared it. So there's a persistence of infection. That is a little more serious in the sense that you're then less likely to be able to clear it. The other really important thing is there are various grades of abnormality, right? So it's not just when we get the report of the pap smear, it's not just is it normal or abnormal. There's lots of different grades of abnormality. For example, if your wife's pap smear had come back something called ascus, which just means atypical cells of undetermined significance, meaning they're just a little off, and we know that she's been exposed to the HPV virus, well, that may, after a little further evaluation, like a colposcopy, where now we look very carefully at the cervix, we biopsy if any areas look a little abnormal. As long as it's a very superficial sort of infection, many times you will be able to clear it. I mean, if your wife is young, it's, you know, obviously, you know, 30, she's young. If she's healthy and doesn't have any other predisposing things, then most likely the only thing the gynecologist would recommend at that point is just more frequent pap smears, just to make sure it's not progressing. So there is a possibility that she can clear it depending on how deep the abnormal cells go into the cervix. Now, if when they do, for example, the colposcopy where they look, they take a biopsy, now when the pathologist looks at it, it's not just on the surface, but it's actually the abnormal cells go a little bit deeper into the cervix. Well, that's going to be a lot harder to clear because now we've got a much deeper abnormality. And in that case, her gynecologist might recommend that that they go ahead and just sort of shave off a little piece there that's abnormal and just cure it and be done with it, sort of a thing.
Do we know, Paul? Do you know in your situation how long or when your wife was diagnosed with HPV?
Right, she has her yearly test, and this is the first year that she's had it. And she just had her colonoscopy on Tuesday, and she's also worried about, you were talking about affecting childbirth in the future. Is a colonoscopy going to affect childbirth in the future?
Colposcopy?
Yeah, right. So the colposcopy does not have any bearing at all.
Why don't you, in 30 seconds, sure. Describe what you do when you do a colposcopy.
So when we do a colposcopy, all we do is we put in a speculum, and we actually put vinegar on the cervix because the vinegar interacts with the cells of the cervix and makes abnormal areas turn white. So the cervix is pink. So
stuff lights up white.
Correct. Abnormal areas light up white. We have the colposcope, which is really just a glorified magnifying glass with a light that we look. So now the cervix looks enormous too, as we can. 99% of the colposcopy is just looking. Mm-hmm. We're just scanning the whole surface of the cervix very carefully, looking for any areas that light up.
You see endocervix too?
We cannot see the. Okay. We can't really see the endocervix. That we simply take a scraping, and take a sample of cells separately from any biopsies that we do. And if at the time of the colposcopy, if we see anything abnormal, then we just take a little tiny snip, a little biopsy of it, mm-hmm. and that gives the pathologist now something better to work with rather than just random cells like we gave him for the pap smear.
All right. So Paul, back to your situation. So she had a colposcopy when was it?
Right, it was on Tuesday.
On Tuesday. And she recently was positive for HPV in her pap. And did you get the results of the colposcopy?
No, we haven't gotten them yet.
Okay.
Okay, so that's going to determine what's going to happen next. If the colposcopy comes back and just superficial, what's called CIN1, so you can think of it as different levels, level 1, 2, 3, and then beyond. So level 1, CIN1, very superficial stuff that we usually just recommend more frequent pap smears. That's it. If it comes back a little bit deeper, like 2 or 3, then at that point, the gynecologist will probably suggest something called the LEAP procedure, which is where we literally just go in and just take a little tiny piece of the cervix. Now,
from the abnormal area.
Correct. Now, if from a LEAP procedure, typically from one LEAP procedure, there's no really much increased risk in a pregnancy in the future. The worry here, the whole worry about taking off and altering the anatomy of the cervix and how it relates to a future pregnancy is that we shorten the cervix. Every time we take a little piece, it's a little bit shorter. The problem is, as the pregnancy develops, there's a lot of pressure then on that cervix, and it's got to hold tight to keep the pregnancy in. If we've shortened it too much, then the worry is that it's going to give out and open up too soon, and you could lose the pregnancy. Now, you know, all hope is not lost, even in women who've had multiple excision procedures. We simply put in what's called a cerclage, which is you can think of it as like a little purse string stitch around the cervix that just cinches it tight to help, you know, again, help the cervix be able to hold in the pregnancy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you know, again, if your wife's biopsy, when her doctor calls her, comes back just CIN1, meaning very superficial stuff, then the most likely thing that's going to happen is just she's going to have just increased surveillance. Or, you know, even worst case scenario is not really that bad in the sense that, you know, assuming that it's not cancer. I mean, obviously that would be the worst case scenario, but assuming it's just a deeper abnormality, mm-hmm. she may just need something very simple. It's done in the office, typically
the LEAP procedure,
mm-hmm. right? It's an office procedure. It's nothing, no big deal. Mm-hmm. And it's curative. I mean, that's, you can think of it as, you know, the flip side of all this is that even if she needs to have a procedure done, it's a heck of a lot better than cancer.
Right.
We're curing her of something before it ever turns into cancer, which mm-hmm. which is lethal.
How do you know? Let me turn it over to Paul if you have a question, because if not, then I have a question here.
That's all I had. I appreciate the answers.
All right. Thank you very much, Paul.
Bye.
Okay. Now, with a LEAP procedure, how do you know how far to go, how the extent to take the additional tissue?
Right. So that's a very good question, and we don't always, there's no...
It's not like a Mohs procedure.
Right,
where you have, you know,
correct.
Or
you're not measuring exactly how deep. What we try to do is we try to be conservative when we do the LEAP procedure because, again, we don't want to foreshorten the cervix too much. So how we counsel our patients is, okay, we're going to go ahead and take just a superficial piece of the abnormal area. Just make sure we get clear. What we're looking for are clean margins. So when we take off the piece, the other thing that happens is we use what's called, it's electrocautery. Mm-hmm. So basically it cuts and burns at mm-hmm. the same time. Mm-hmm. So what we know is that we can stay pretty shallow because even if the abnormality goes just a little bit deeper, mm-hmm. we burn it with the cautery.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we're still going to get rid of those cells. So we'd rather be conservative again. And what we counsel patients is that there's a possibility that we may have to go back and take a little more. Mm-hmm. But we'd rather do that than take a great big bite right off the bat of normal cervix.
Right. Is there any use for topical chemotherapy, like absolute alcohol or cryotherapy?
So cryotherapy used was very popular in the past. We used to be a lot more aggressive with abnormal pap smears.
And I should say, I'm sorry, everybody, cryo meaning freezing treatment to the area.
Right. So we used to be a lot more aggressive. Mm-hmm. And as the recommendations have changed on how we follow abnormal pap smears, they've become less aggressive. Again, as we understand more the natural history of the disease, we can be less aggressive and back off a little bit. For CIN1, meaning that superficial infection, we used to very routinely freeze the surface of the cervix. That causes a sloughing off of those cells. They die, they slough off. So it's kind of like your skin where you shed superficial layers of it all the time. We force that to happen with the cervix to clear a CIN1, so a level 1 superficial infection. Now what we know is that the cervix can do that on its own in most healthy women. Now one of the an important note here as far as you know what we considered healthy women, cigarette smoking is a tremendous risk factor in the development of abnormal pap smears and therefore cervical cancer.
Do we know the mechanism of action of that increased risk?
We do not. We don't fully understand that. It has to do with just with the carcinogens, I think, found in cigarette smoke.
Okay. I'm gonna take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to ask Dr. Barrera about the possible use of interferon. I personally had experience with cancer of the surface of the eye, and I was able to report a case where we reversed and cured a topical cancer of the surface of the eye with topical interferon. I'm wondering if it can be used in this setting as well. We'll be right back with more on abnormal pap smears.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back. We are tackling abnormal pap smears with guest expert Dr. Judy Barrera, the Women's Group in Tampa. And before break, we were talking about therapy for abnormal pap smears, basically, and I brought up the notion of possibly using something which I already discovered in the ophthalmic world, the treatment for surface cancer of the eye with interferon. And again, threw it out as a possible consideration if the OBGYN community has looked at that yet.
Yeah, to my knowledge, I haven't seen studies specifically looking at interferon as a way to treat superficial abnormalities of the cervix. One, and it would be an interesting thing, it would depend, I guess, on how deeply it was able to go, we were able to use it. Because of what I was mentioning is that the superficial abnormality, CIN1, that first level where it's just superficial cells that are abnormal, right now, where the approach is a very hands-off, just repeat the pap smear, because the idea is that the body should be able to fight off a superficial infection.
Can you get